Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission. Here with episode 175 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Wheat in the Time of COVID-19, about my conversation with six Eastern Washington farmers during the third week of April 2020. For those with a literary bent, you likely recognize that my title is cribbed from the 1985 novel Love in the Time of Cholera by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. But that's where the similarity ends. Wheat, the plant, has not been affected by the pandemic or social distancing. The winter crop planted last September has continued to grow, and the spring wheat crop was successfully planted and is poking its coleoptiles through the soil as I speak. But while it's business as usual for the wheat, it is not for the farmers who plant, tend, and harvest the crop, as you'll hear ahead. That's not to say anyone I talk to is complaining of oppressive mandates. Everyone sees the opportunity to do their part, and all want to get the country's economy moving again as soon as it makes sense. When Washington Governor Jay Inslee mandated social distancing and work-from-home rules on March 11th, among those whose work was deemed essential were wheat farmers. Not to diminish the tough decisions the governor has made in the last couple of months, but certainly farming, particularly wheat farming, was one of the easier calls, given that the industry exists in a kind of self-imposed quarantine, particularly during busy times of the year, like spring planting. For the record, the Washington Grain Commission and its staff were also deemed essential, which is one of the reasons you're hearing this podcast. Of course, social distancing has necessitated changes in the way I'm handling podcasts. This episode, 175, will be the first time I have conducted interviews over the phone and computer. While the quality isn't as good as face-to-face interviews, I think it rivals what I hear on the radio. If you're having trouble with the audio, let me know by writing to Wheat All About It at waai@wagrains.org. That's waai@wagrains.org. Or comment on the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page. Speaking of which, there'll be photos posted on Facebook of the farmers I interview on today's episode. Please follow the page while you're there. Members of the Washington Grain Commission represent a cross-section of farmers across eastern Washington, which is why I interview three of them in the episode ahead, including Gary Bailey, who farms near St. John, Mike Karstensen, who farms near Elmira, and Ben Barstow, who farms near Palouse. But you'll also be hearing from three farmers who aren't on the commission, people I chose because I thought they might have an interesting take on wheat farming in the time of a pandemic. They include Gary Roseman of Davenport, Chris Heron of Connell, and Larry Cochran of Colfax. First up is Gary Bailey, chairman of the WGC, who farms with his brother and niece, responding to a question about what has changed in his life since March 11th.
Well, there's really not any differences because we, for the most part, work alone anyway. But, you know, I'd say the only noticeable thing that I can talk about is when someone does show up, everybody's pretty aware of the social distancing protocols. And so rather than stand around and shake hands and stuff like that, we stand in a larger circle and do our business that way. There's been a few changes as far as how we do business in town.
Well, tell me about that.
Well, most of the businesses are really dark right now. By that, I mean there's people inside working, but the doors are locked and the lights are off. So when we go to town to do business with some of our merchants, you have to either call ahead or knock on the door to be able to go inside. Our grocery store, for example, is locked, and you take the list and you go knock on the door and hand the list to the people inside, and and they go pick up your groceries and bring them back outside to you. Our banking is curbside banking is what we call it, because there's no drive-through window. So there, the door's locked. Someone comes out, you hand them your deposit or whatever your business is, and take care of it that way.
Mike Carstensen talks about the ripples from the COVID-19 pandemic, including his relationship with his 92-year-old parents.
There's quite a few things, I think, and even though we're rural and remote and our work is somewhat isolated and not like the big cities, but we still have grocery shopping. The other day we went to the grocery store and it was very strange because everybody was standoffish and would not hardly look at you. And it used to be when you go to the grocery store, you would visit with everybody. And so that's kind of a change. And another change is family, visiting family. I've got my parents and are 92 years old in assisted living, and they're in lockdown. And I can't blame the assisted living for that. Nobody wants them to get sick. And so they're just almost like they're in isolation. And as tough as that is for us to want to visit them, I wonder how they feel about you know, nobody, no grandkids or anything coming to see them. So we reach out to them often and send pictures all the time. That's one example. The other example is visiting, you know, our kids and our family. They're in lockdown in places. Social distancing, and there's just not that interaction that way. That is one thing I see. I think probably what we're seeing more is a lot more interaction on the various website social sites like Zoom or Lifesize or something like that to visit with family, or Skype or FaceTime. I guess we're using that a little bit more.
Are you taking any precautions when it comes to potential exposure to COVID-19?
Well, you know, I think we're not, you know, shaking hands as much. We're not real close in our interaction. I have a very good friend who has health issues, and you know, he's a high-risk person. And
What about changes as you go to town for parts and chemicals and seed and things like that that you need for your farm?
The seed deal has changed somewhat in a little bit that we called ahead and say what we're wanting, and we maybe leave a truck and go back and get it later. As long as they know we're coming and they're waiting, we can stay in the truck to get the seed. A lot of the paperwork that we used to sign in person, we don't sign anymore. They sign it for us, understandably so. Parts, call ahead, and sometimes they have it. If they don't have it, we wait till they have it. If they have it, they leave it out. There's a little less interaction there, things like that. As far as the inputs for the fertilizer and fuel and that sort of thing, we're getting our deliveries as before, so there's not a lot of change there. There is quite a significant savings in the cost of fuel. That's one thing that's very noticeable.
Yes, but did you buy all your fuel earlier?
Well, you know, a lot of guys around here do buy in bulk, and they buy right at the optimum time that they think the lowest price is. And historically, there's never been a pandemic that caused the price of fuel to fall out. And so some of us, and the co-op including, they bought some contracts at a little higher price on fuel. And so, you know, that's going to hurt them a little bit, I think. But we're all in it together.
Farmers, as Gary Roseman explains here, understand that what they are going through is not particularly onerous given what others are experiencing. But it's certainly different from anything that's come before.
For instance, when I need parts for my sprayer, I have to call in, order the part. Then when I get there, I call them and they set them outside the door and I walk up and pick them up. That's great as long as I remember everything in that phone call. But if I forget that little hose barb or something like that, it's not right there for me to remember that I needed that and grab it. So my distancing is my part suppliers. I don't get to personally go into the store. I have to tell them what I need. When I go get seed, I'm supposed to stay in the truck, not get out of the truck. And then at my local warehouse, in my accounting office, they're closed. I can call them, but there's no personal interaction. So, for instance, I'm supposed to sign for my income tax, electronic filing. I have to sign the paper and then put it through the mail slot. My world's different because of this, but it's not bad.
Now, are you taking any precautions yourself when it comes to potential exposure to the COVID-19?
As much as I can. Yes, I'm wearing a face mask if I go to the grocery store. And we had to go to the grocery store. But I think the biggest thing I'm doing is trying to wash my hands whenever I do experience a gas pump or anything. My hands are chapped. That sanitizer is hard on your skin. So that's my personal story.
What about the impact to businesses in town and elsewhere? I mean, you're in that Reardon-Davenport corridor. What do you see?
You know, Scott, so the businesses I've needed to deal with, the fuel station, the fuel company, the auto parts and the spray parts and that kind of stuff, they're not open for me to walk in, but I can call and get the stuff I need. What I'm more concerned with is my local restaurants that are not busy. I don't know how they're going to survive this. The grocery store has some days quite a few people, some days hardly anybody there. All these businesses have to be hurting, but I don't see that myself because I'm not in town that often right now. I think it's more the retail business that deals with everybody, not just farmers.
I've been fascinated, not by the direct impacts of the pandemic, but the ripples. Like what happened to oil prices when the world's oil storage was exhausted. Here, Ben Barstow addresses a critical ripple and then segues into another observation concerning his county's emergency medical services, or EMS.
The first operational impact I noticed was I went to get some parts, automotive parts like, and they weren't available. Not just weren't available in the warehouse in Spokane, they weren't available, period. Because the company that makes those parts was not working.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has much inventory of anything anymore. Everything is, as much as possible, everything is just-in-time processing and demand. And I had some parts that weren't available, and I had to find somebody to remanufacture them in Spokane.
Interesting. Now, it sounds like you are actually going into parts stores. Is that correct? Because I have talked to other farmers who say that they have to phone in, and then the parts are put out on the sidewalk somewhere.
I haven't run into that yet. Well, I have to confess that the last parts store I dealt with was in Idaho, so it may be different than Washington. I'm about equal distance from a parts store in Idaho and a parts store in Colfax, Washington.
So are you taking any precautions when it comes to potential exposure to COVID-19?
You know, that's the thing about being in the middle of spring work. You hardly see anybody other than the parts counter during spring work and harvest anyway. So it's not like I've cut back social activities a lot. I tend to be locked up on the farm during those times anyway. One of the changes in the community, it's been really difficult for volunteer EMS providers in our small communities as well, because they're usually don't have a surplus of staff. And when one of them gets exposed to somebody with the virus through the course of providing services, they have to go in quarantine for 2 weeks to see if they've got it before they can go back out on a call, because they don't want to spread it to somebody on a call that doesn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've had to change the way they do business too. Our local group here, if you call for an ambulance or for EMS services, three people will respond, but only one person is going to come in the house and talk to you, because we can't afford to have three of them exposed at once and have everybody in quarantine, and we don't have anybody to respond.
As a reporter for the Capitol Press, I interviewed Chris Herron regularly about conservation issues around the state, and I always enjoyed his cut-to-the-chase style. Here's his version of how the pandemic is affecting him and his farm.
Well, not very much, to be quite honest with you. Farmers, by nature, practice social distancing just because of their occupation. They go out in the field, work all day, and come home, and they are not around people that much during the course of the work week. Family, children at home, but they don't live in urban areas. So as far as I'm concerned, being single, there has been very little difference at all.
What about going into town? What about getting parts? What about, I guess you're not getting any seed because you don't plant any spring wheat down there.
Instead of going to town 4 days a week and having coffee with the boys and visiting with the insurance guy, I just cut it down to 2 days a week, because Connell is, because of governor's order, is pretty much a ghost town. It's shut down. There's only things open to grain supply and the Napa store. There's no place to eat, or in the grocery store. So post office on Wednesday and Saturdays, and the rest of the time I just stay at home. Mm-hmm, as far as Tri-Cities and equipment, you walk in the front door and there's stools or a table and a piece of yellow tape about 10 feet away from the parts counter. So you just do your business a ways away, and sometimes you say it's this is a part I need, and then they turn the computer screen around and say, is it this one or is it this one? And I say, yeah. And they don't hand it to you. They take it out the back door and set it on the dock. And I say, thank you. They sign my name, and I drive around the back and grab what I need, and there's no human interaction. That's the only difference I see.
Yeah, yeah. So are you taking any precaution when it comes to potential exposure?
Yeah, I have a N95 mask and nitrile work gloves that I use for working on heavy equipment. And I loaded my pickup up with them. So I mask and glove up when I go to the grocery store or the post office to protect myself from giving anything I have to other people or catching it. Those are the precautions.
It used to be that most wheat farmers also had cattle, but that's no longer the case. Larry Cochran is an exception, but he told me cattle aren't a problem in the near term. However, he is concerned about packing plants shutting down.
Well, I can't go to town and have coffee with the boys anymore. So, drinking lots of coffee at home by myself with the wife. So, that's one of the things. And then the others is I still got to go for parts. I still got to go for seed. You still got to maintain things, and everybody's got signs up on how they want things differently. I go to get seed, I don't get out of the truck now. They just come to the door and ask me what I want and load it, and away I go. So there's the interaction part is way less.
What about getting groceries?
Well, I'm not used to people hoarding, so when I go to get what I want and it's not there, it's kind of scratched my head. But overall, I've been able to get what I want. It may get tougher later on when, you know, when the slaughterhouses are closed for a couple of weeks, there may be a gap in supplies of meat and whatnot to the supermarkets, so then I'm not sure quite what the future holds. That doesn't bother me too much because I got a freezer full of my own.
Yeah, I bet you do. So are you taking any precautions when it comes to potential exposure to the COVID-19 virus?
I try to not go places unless I have to. Luckily in Whitman County, there isn't very many cases. I have no clue where the cases are that are there, but yeah, I'm maintaining. I'm washing my hands a little bit more. I'm hoping that cow manure and grease is a good deterrent, though.
Near the end of our conversation, I asked the men who deserved a shout-out for going above and beyond during the pandemic. There were both macro and micro viewpoints. Gary Bailey praised the nation's medical workers.
I just can't thank enough the healthcare workers. I mean, what? I don't understand how they can do their job under these types of conditions. It's probably not as bad in the rural areas because they don't have the influx of cases like they do in the large cities. But still, the EMTs and the nurses and doctors that have to deal with this, it's got to be troubling because they could be taking it home to their families.
Mike Karstensen gave a thumbs up to those closer to home.
It's collectively a whole bunch of groups. One example is, say, the local school district. Now I see their buses around noon driving all over, and what they're doing is they're taking their food money and delivering lunches to their kids out in the country here. That's quite a deal for them to do. Or every business out here has tried to adjust somehow to, get through this, as all of us probably have too.
Gary Roseman cast a wide net when it comes to his gratitude.
I think everybody's still out there trying to make our economy function, from the truck drivers that put fuel in the gas station to the truck drivers that bring food to our grocery store. Yes, they're getting paid, but they're an essential part of our living out here, living in the United States. I think we're going to have to support everybody that continues to make to allow us to live in this great country. Not just one particular group, but everybody still out there making sure that there's food in the grocery stores, gas in the gas tanks, water in our kitchens and our every place else. I think we've got to keep everybody in mind.
Chris Herron also thought public servants and medical workers deserve special praise.
Any fire, police, EMS, or hospital person that had to wade through that day to day and risk their life to do their jobs in the urban centers across the nation, those are the people that my heart goes out to them. I think they all deserve a medal.
And finally, Larry Cochran was grateful for those on the front lines of agriculture who have continued to provide farmers the services and products necessary to feed the world.
Grocery stores, for one, equipment dealers, seed dealers. I mean, they're, like I said, they have different options in place, but they're all open and getting the seed and fertilizer we need, so we can keep producing the food that we'll need come fall.
I realize I showed my age in this podcast, as all of the individuals I spoke with are on the older end of the spectrum. I intend to correct that omission and interview farmers on the younger end in an upcoming episode. Despite that omission, I hope you enjoyed episode 175, or what I entitled, Wheat in the Time of COVID-19. Please join me again next week for more Wheat All About It!
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.